I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valley stair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man.
Just give our, like, our 30-second take of, like, the nation, and but also, like, specifically Pennsylvania. And, yeah, but let me just say, welcome to Barnstorming Pennsylvania. It's a delight to have you guys here. Even though I'm living in Sweden right now, I feel like I'm living on Eastern Standard Time right now. but anyway, we have a really sweet show today. Jacob Furstein's here. He was a campaign manager for Katie Evans' campaign in the 85th and is doing an internship in DC right now. Welcome, Jake.
Hi. Thank you.
And Keith Pemrick here is here.
Returning champion
Keith Pemrick. He ran Danny Wolf's campaign in 2018 and is a lobbyist in DC. But the good kind. welcome Keith.
Oh yeah, but Keith, you were also. Yeah, it's so great to see you again. Thank you for coming on. You were also with us in one of our more unusual remote locations. We were in that library
in Bloomsburg.
Bloomsburg.
That was my first ever podcast and my only ever podcast, but that was a super cool location.
Yeah. Well, your brother's house looks pretty nice.
Yeah, he has a lot of property. I'm in Robinsonia, which is Western Berks County right now.
And you're in PA. Awesome.
Yeah.
And of course, Jordy's here. Welcome, Jordy.
Hi. Yes, I'm here.
So I think we are going to start and just give just go one by one and give our initial takes, starting maybe nationally and just sort of zooming in on Pennsylvania.
It really looked like Keith just took a slug from a Jack Daniels bottle. Oh. Because I was like, that's impressive.
That kind of night, Keith.
That kind of night where I need caffeine.
Yeah.
Who wants to start? Jacob, do you want to go first? Since you've got a little bit of a time crunch here.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Sort of just, I guess my interpretation has been like, it's sort of what we expected. Definitely, this is the path that most likely was going to happen. And I mean, I think everyone was a little disappointed because some good polling at the very end made it look like Biden was going to win North Carolina or Florida, or had a shot at it. And I think that everyone was at least a little disappointed when those did not pan out in Biden's favor. And in DC, it actually led to some brawls in the street. And with the disappointment very high. But I think that time will tell. And once all the votes are counted, I feel optimistic about the outcome.
And what about Pennsylvania?
Oh, in Pennsylvania, I think things went well in some areas of Pennsylvania and they went the opposite direction in others. I think in in around Philly and in Allegheny County, things look really good for Democrats, better than they did for Hillary Clinton. But in terms of central PA and Katie's race, it looks like Republicans were really energized. Democrats were also energized, just the numbers just weren't there.
Yeah. Keith, do you wanna give us your take?
Sure. I think for months now we've listened to President Trump try and sow doubt in the what the result would be, and we saw that tenfold last night or this morning at 2 o'clock or whatever time that was. And because Jacob's point, it kind of panned out as we thought. As I was mentioning before, we kind of got on here, but I put a lot of stock in what Dave Wasserman has to say with the Cook Political Report. And he outside of North Carolina, which looks like it's going to go Trump, and he had for Biden, like, he's been pretty accurate with all of this. And there's a lot of, I think, from a Democratic or liberal perspective, right, a lot of doom and gloom because of 16, and it caught us all sort of off guard. And but you go back to his tweets from 2016, and he was kind of predicting that Dems were in trouble. And Florida came in and everybody's panicking, and the early big numbers for Trump in Michigan or in Pennsylvania and, you know, Ohio looked good for Dems and Biden, and then it didn't. And then Michigan and Wisconsin came in, and it was big early for Trump. And, you know, now we're at this point where, you know, we have to count the mail-in ballots. And, you know, you see things online of people who voted for Trump, like, oh, I don't understand. And Trump says it's still voting when it's not, or hidden ballots when they're not. But yeah, like for months, Trump said, don't mail in your ballot. While it was very legal, and Trump supporters did not mail in their ballot, and their votes have been counted, and Democrats who have taken COVID more seriously have mailed in their ballots, and that's why, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin this morning, and Michigan just more recently, and I think Pennsylvania in the next, possibly later today or tomorrow, we're going to see Pennsylvania go from Trump here and Biden here to Biden here and Trump here, and I think, you know, specific to PA, I think the maybe not Chester as much, but the other Collar counties, and we'll see what happens with Bucks, but I think Delaware and Montgomery really performed well. I think we're going to see good performance in Philly. And then take a county like Lackawanna, where Hillary was -3 and Biden will be +5. He's not hitting Obama 12 numbers, and he's not hitting Wolf Casey 18 numbers, but it's good. It's an 8-point switch from 16, and we need little things like that in addition to filling the Collar counties in Allegheny. Beaver still has to count mail-in. I think that's favorable for us. So I think at the end of the day, you'll see Biden victorious in PA.
Yeah, and I mean, and on that note, I was checking the Pennsylvania open data website right now, and both Allegheny and Philadelphia have at least half of their mail-in count to go. And that's going, I mean, in those counties, it's going to go 8-1 or more. And that's a lot of votes right there. So I feel confident. I mean, a lot of counties haven't even started counting their mail-in vote, which is,
you know, Lehigh has like 40,000 outstanding at the moment. Maybe a little less now, but that's favorable to Biden. And Susan Wild, who's down at the moment.
Is she?
Yeah. Susan Wild's down, and, Cartwright's down, and Lamb is down right now.
But I think all
down by a very small margin.
You know, I mean, and if, well, anyway, Taylor, did you do your sort of top of the line?
I didn't do mine yet. I can go, or you can go, whichever.
I was hoping to go last.
Okay. I mean, I went to bed pretty upset, to be totally honest. Florida broke my heart once again. But looking,
there's
at
a country song in there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get the banjo out. But looking at the numbers today, and for what it's worth, I think that Trump has all of his votes have been counted, and in a lot of these states, specifically Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. We're just banking Biden votes that have already been cast and that are going to break in our direction significantly. And so given that, I'm feeling pretty good. And if you look at the numbers of the states that are still counting that Biden is leaning in, I think Biden will win a lot of these states narrowly, but I think he could eke out a lot of them. And I think you'll see, hopefully in the next few weeks, hopefully sooner, I think a lot of these states could break for Biden, and it could be a pretty resounding victory, I hope. In Pennsylvania, the thing that I keep coming back to is that, like I always start with Union County because that's where we're from. I've got a tattoo of the county on my arm, I know it well. You know, Biden got 7,303 just raw votes there. And that's like about 20 votes less than Obama 2008 numbers. And we still have about 100 outstanding ballots to count. And if you look at a lot of the central PA counties, just in terms of raw numbers, Democrats are performing very well, right? Very well there. It's just that the Republicans are also performing very well there. Like they went for a strategy of registering voters, and it really paid off. And I was very skeptical of that because it's hard to get, you know, Joe Schmo that's, you know, 53 and has never voted before to vote, but I guess it works. So, you know, I'm I'm hopeful that as the ballots get counted, we'll flip some of these seats. Like Michelle Noel in Allegheny County is losing like by like 30% right now, but you know, a lot of the mail-in vote still has to come in, and I think that race is going to tighten up. I think we can still win some seats on the House, and hopefully we'll retain some on the Senate or on the House, the PA House. So I don't know.
So what I would add that other folks haven't touched on maybe as much is I mean, I'm coming to this as much from a perspective as a progressive organizer, and I've been in a lot of conversations going on for weeks now about what do we do if we're in this situation? What do we do if it's tight? And there's a lot of efforts to try and make sure votes aren't counted. And so I'm aware of kind of two levels of this conversation. One is, you know, like I look at the New York Times website and I see what proportion of the vote is left to count in Pennsylvania. And I hear us talking in those terms. And what I'm going to say is just observational. It's not critical, but it's like we're talking as if the process of vote counting is itself immune from political fights. But of course, I know we all know it's not. So whether or not states that are very narrow, like I think Wisconsin's close now and it's down within the automatic recount trigger, the way that plays out is going to be not just a function of who was the electorate up to November 3rd and on November 3rd, but also how does the political struggle play out now? I think Keith and I probably remember Bush Gore 2000 better, and I'm even wrong on my history, but you know, I feel like it was a case where the Democrats, to a certain extent, you know, didn't just bring a knife to a gunfight; they brought Robert's Rules of Order, That was for you, Keith. So I'm hoping I'm reasonably confident from sort of whispering and chatter that I get that the Biden-Harris campaign, that they are really, you know, they're bringing a gun to a gunfight here, and I see some positive signs about that. But so that's one piece. The other one is this is both Pennsylvania and maybe other states. It seems like we're less and less in a period where there's kind of national trends that matter as much. It seems like some things that are going on in certain states matter for those states. You know, North Carolina is going to go to Trump and Georgia to Biden. If we do end up with Michigan, Wisconsin going to Biden and maybe Pennsylvania goes to Trump, like I think I agree with you all that it seems like it's going towards Biden. But you know what I'm saying? Some of these Senate races, like I thought Jamie Harrison was going to do better than he did. So, you know, it seems like, you know, if people want to understand what's going on, they need to continue to step away from this idea that there are national trends that play out in similar ways in each state. I think organizing and demographic shifts, you know, that Texas is close, that Georgia is close, has a lot to do with demographic shifts and what the party is doing in those states.
On your first point there, like, I think that, the Raging Cajun, what's his name?
Carville.
Yeah, Carville said last night, like, we need to, like, be out there and act like winners, you know, because like that shifts the narrative so much in our favor. And I'm a listener of Hacks on Tap, and Mike Murphy was saying, you know, like, you know, I'd rather have the French army behind me than the Democrats, because they're just quaking in their boots right now. And I feel like that's so totally in line, and we just have to like be fucking strong and like make sure we count this goddamn ballot and act like winners, because like it's looking like we are. I would much rather be Biden than Trump right now.
Well, so can I speak to that, Taylor? Because this has been on my mind a little bit, and this is one of these podcasts where I may make some new fans of the podcast and a lot of enemies of my allies, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Say it. I'm not here. You can catch my laugh. I know you guys appreciate it.
Yeah, we love the laughs.
Yeah.
and I see Jacob's laughing. But anyway, you know, I think that a lot of liberals and progressives and whatever, they read into the rosier polling scenario the America that they wish existed, and it doesn't. It just doesn't. This is two Americas. John Edwards, you know, not a great guy, great metaphor or great image. And those two Americas are still there. And Trump, I got this from a pundit, he didn't widen his coalition in terms of diversity, but he extended in terms of numbers or however you want to think about that. And those people are there. And there's still this like kind of loathing of those people and deplorables, to use Hillary Clinton's language. I think it's there. And Americans, liberals and progressives who are Americans, like I've heard progressives saying like, I guess I have to swallow the medicine and talk about Count Every Vote in terms of American values if I have to. And that very, you know, that sense of concession I'm bringing into the front stage stuff that happens in the backstage, right? Like the whole messaging strategy around Count Every Vote is we need to lean into this as utterly American values. And if in your heart of hearts you feel like that's a sacrifice for you to make, and I'm not criticizing you, the progressive person, I'm just saying observationally, other people can sense that. And Trump has a huge base of people who do love what they think he is. Now, I don't think they really understand what he really is, but they love what they think he is. And to just throw up our arms and be like, ugh, you know, those people just need to come to their senses. I just think that's a losing organizational strategy for a Democratic Party and a progressive movement, and it's a losing electoral strategy in terms of messaging. And I worry that we fall into that trap.
If I touch on a couple of things. South Carolina, real quick. Jamie's a friend. We worked together on the Hill, and we went to Turkey together in 2008 on a congressional trip. He had more money than he needed. He ran a great race, and he outperformed the 2014 candidate by about 2 points. Mm-hmm. So that's not to take anything away from Jamie, but we need to look at that. To talk about like the you know, would you say rubber bands to a gunfight?
I said Robert's Rules of Order.
Well, right, that's right. Sorry. Yeah. Right, you know, either one, right? But we brought Robert's Rules of Order to a gunfight. You know, the Lincoln Project obviously has got a lot of publicity in the last 3 months or more because their work is fantastic. Well, and, you know, well, why is their work fantastic? Because they're Republicans, right? They bring guns to gunfights. And, you know, we don't. And it's because, well, we don't want to rock the boat, or we want to be nice. And the whole, like, acting like winners, I mean, Bob Casey's been on TV, at least on NBC and MSNBC, and he's talking like a winner. And that's what we need. And Carvo was talking like a winner last night, and I'm getting all these panic texts from my friends. And I'm like, y'all need, like, after Florida, and I'm like, y'all need to be patient. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we, our default is to like, no. And Biden was smart to get on TV before Trump last night. We knew Trump was going to say something outrageous. And of course he did, but Biden said, no, we're confident we're going to win, and we have to let this process carry out. But we need to be lawyered up with lawyers with machine guns, not machetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I totally agree. And I also wanted to, one thing that you said, Jordy, was sort of like Trump has expanded his base sort of laterally, but not, you know, vertically through like different types of people. And I think that that's sort of true, but I mean, if you turn on MSNBC or any news channel, they'll tell you what happened in Miami-Dade. And I think like that actually does speak to some widening, that is more than just getting more people. It's getting a different kind of people as well. And I think, it goes sort of back. I don't know how he did it because it honestly doesn't make sense to me. I don't know what kind of messaging like works well, with those groups of people in Miami-Dade, but I think, the interesting thing about it is that, it's sort of exactly what Romney had said in 2012, and that the, you know, expanding the Republican Party is the only way to win. And if he hadn't expanded that his, you know, or cut his losses in Miami-Dade by as much as he did, it would have been a much closer race in Florida. So kind of an interesting point.
I mean, I'd want to see the Latino vote other places. I think that's largely Cubans who vote their own way.
Yeah,
we lost two House seats in Miami. One that was on the radar, the Debbie McCursor Powell seat. Then Donna Shalala lost, and you know my
really
my friend
that Donna Shalala from the Clinton administration.
She my friend Dan Constant runs the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is Kevin McCarthy's super PAC, and I texted him this morning about a few things, and one of them was that, and he said we pulled that race in September and said no thanks. So that, like, she just got caught sleeping. Mm-hmm. But, like, people weren't paying attention. But on one hand, but to the point of both you guys made, like, you know, he did grow numbers. And Cubans, obviously, but other folks as well.
I don't quite know what to make of it. And I feel like like we're going to need to do a larger autopsy of the polling that we are doing and like, and our messaging. And like, I'm sure no one's more upset than Nate Silver.
I mean, Taylor, I think 2 days ago you and I were talking and, about the national polling, and I was like, sort of, I feel like a curmudgeon, but I'm like, I don't know why anyone does national polling for the presidential race. It just seems to create, it's like, it reminds me of like a little bit of like stock market stuff where you have so much data and so many layers of analysis. It's just a self-perpetuating noise machine. You know, people analyzing whether or not the national poll means this or that. I'm like, it seems more and more detached from the way this plays out in different states. I mean, I haven't studied the models deeply, so, you know, maybe I'm throwing wild pitches, but.
Yeah. But even like the poll, what, had Biden up 17 in Wisconsin a few days ago?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. What?
I mean, clearly they're misestimating what the electorate's gonna be wildly, right? So, and yet, it seems like it seems like there's as many or more polls now than there were 4 years ago. So even though it doesn't seem to work well, the media companies and sort of the whole media ecology and economy, which overlaps into the polling companies, they just want more of this. And in a way, I think it's kind of related. I think earlier on, Keith, you said something about people haunted by Florida in 2016. I think that's definitely it, right? Like, I think even our side is having a hard time. You're saying be patient. I totally agree with that. I think, you know, our side is having a hard time with that because we're so conditioned by so many things to, you know, to think that like we're going to have the answer. You know, we're just not. You know, it's like if you really like organic apples, you just have to wait until they come into season.
Yeah.
You just have to wait. You can have a Snickers bar anytime you want, but if you want a really good organic apple, you just got to wait.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I think a lot of people are upset, in particular, like if we're just zooming in on Pennsylvania, is that it feels like we had such incredible grassroots activism and organizing and, you know, with the Lancaster Stands Up people and the Pennsylvania Stands Up people and incredible candidates. You know, Turn PA Blue has just done fantastic work. And part of it is like, I don't know what we could have done differently that would have been like better. Like I feel like as a state we're so much better organized, and we have such better candidates than we were 4 years ago. And so I think part of the reason why, and of course we need to count the votes because we could have won a lot of these. But you know, I think part of the reason why at least I'm feeling like a little bit like flabbergasted is it just like I'm not seeing what exactly we could have done differently.
What's the congressional race, Keith, in Berks County and Lancaster? Who ran against Smucker now?
Relatively young woman. Honestly drawn a blank on her name.
She didn't win, I guess, then.
No, it wasn't even close.
By Jacob.
See Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob has to go. Yeah.
Tell you in a second.
It's the one that Jess King ran in 2018.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering if
Hammond.
That's interesting. I mean, because you were talking about good candidates, Taylor, and I mean, I don't, you know, I know it's hard to run out here in the very red parts, but you know, we tend to get candidates running for state house and state senate. You know, we've had women run for almost every one of these races the last two cycles in our area, and you know, they're novice candidates. They are incredibly, they just pour their hearts and souls into it. Sometimes they get some training from like Emerge or something like that, Emerge PA, which trains women candidates, which is great. But it's, what am I trying to say? Like, I think we're still stuck about like, there's like a big experiment, right? Like, do you run on kind of a Me Too? I don't mean the Me Too movement, but like somebody running as like Me Too on the cultural issues, like, you know, a Democrat who's, I mean, I hate to say pro-gun. I don't know what that means exactly, right? Or like, when candidates say, I believe in the Second Amendment, I'm like, I believe in it too. It's there. It's written. I understand what it means legally. We're not talking about unicorns, whether or not we believe in them. But anyway, Second Amendment, you know, God's guns and gays, that stuff. Is the only way to win out here to find somebody who's utterly immune to right-wing attacks on that? And then that person's going to have a really hard time fitting into the broader Democratic scene these days. Or do we carve some sort of new path, which is a kind of, you know, which is what I'm inclined to because it's my values. It's like a rural populism that tries to just sidestep some of those issues. and talk about really meeting people's everyday, you know, kitchen table lunch pail needs. Like, that's what I hope would work, but it doesn't seem to.
Do you think it's as much those issues as it is sort of that the folks who own guns or go to church feel like the Democratic Party or the left is kind of like forcing what we think on them? Whether that's true or not, it's what they think. And I call it, I think it was Business Insider had an article a couple years ago, but it's like the hamburger issue. Americans want to eat hamburgers, but we tell them, oh, well, you should be vegetarian, or, oh, that's not a grass-fed cow, or the cow shit is bad for the environment, right? And, like, they just want to eat the hamburger, right, because it tastes good. And yeah. I think, you know, we saw, like, in North Carolina with the transgender bathrooms in 2016 when Roy Cooper, that's his name, right? The governor of North Carolina who won re-election last night, right? Like, that was a big issue there, and the Democrat won. And, you know, I think when
the Democrat won because they went too far in the transgender.
Yeah, because they went right. The other side went too far. I think, like, sometimes we need to, like, let things happen organic, like policy issues happen organically. I don't, like, my brother-in-law's a huge you know, gun rights activist. I don't say activist, that's the wrong way. He owns a lot of guns and he cares about that issue deeply. But that isn't to say he doesn't have, like, common sense on the issue, because he does. Like, he, you know, he doesn't want shootings to happen. Like, and he's, you know, he hunts and he wants to be able to own what, you know, he can own as a sportsman. You know, but it's not like he's out there advocating for assault rifles for everybody, right? So, like, there is, yeah. Like, but we sort of, like, oh no, it has to be this, and then they see that. Like, I mean, I feel like part of the Trump vote is like a fuck you vote. Like,
yeah. It is. I totally agree with you.
I very much feel that. Somebody that I think I was reading this somewhere, and somebody was saying that, like, the left broadly has all of these cultural victories that, like, are played out in the field of the media culture. And culture. And
look at the Mississippi flag. Look at the Mississippi flag issue.
And we have a tremendous amount of cultural power that's not, like, it's, like, political in a sense, but like, conservatives and the right, like, have, like, a tremendous amount of, like governance power, just because the way that our system is devised. And both kind of want what the other one has. You know, like, and you know, and so we're kind of just caught in this thing. And you know, to your point, you know, about, you know, people, you know, the left wants to tell all these people that they can't eat hamburgers and all this bullshit. Like, to a sense, like, that's even, like, despite our politics, that seems to be very accepting. You know, and it's like, we can't win because we have this, like, vanguard, like, this cultural vanguard that is, like it's, and nobody's deciding these things, but, like, as a culture, we're just progressing, you know, and like, our you know, we're changing and responding to things like climate change and gay rights and stuff like this. And I don't know quite what to say, you know, like, I don't know whether to fault the, like, the elected official, like, people running for office and our, like, political machine for, like, making these, I don't know, tactical or strategic blunders. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think it's sometimes I have to go. I mean, I don't know if I can wrap a bow about some of these interesting things y'all are talking about, but I'll take a crack at it. I mean, one thing is, Keith, I agree with you. I think there's a fuck you vote. And I think the thing is, to use a different set of terms, but I think that sort of white fragility comes up a lot in this, right? And so a lot of those white people are being fragile about their whiteness and those kinds of issues. And if I said to them, like, hey, you know, you didn't bring up race in particular, but I feel like it extends to a lot of those things, right? Like, the government is telling me how to be. And so, you know, if I said to somebody, like, you should really ask people about their pronouns, because if you don't, you're participating in the oppressive male hierarchy that dominates and oppresses all people. They would look at me like, what the hell are you saying? And if I said, hey, you know what, my cousin is going through a sex transition and asked me to use they, and I thought, you know, I shouldn't be a dick about it, I should be nice, I would win over some of those people.
Yep.
Right. But I think one reason that that broadly progressive, liberal, whatever, has a harder time with that is speak in the ways in which we can create easier entrance ramps into our worldview, right? To do that creates a lot of internal tension. You know, if I say to other progressives, like, look, let me talk to the white people the way I think I need to talk to them, they're going to feel like I'm trying to create a new kind of white power base, like within the progressive multiracial movement. And we don't have enough trust to get to that point. You know, I've been in spaces where people say, well, if you're organizing and your leadership is not all people of color, you're part of the problem. I'm like, what do you want me to do? It's 92% white here. You want me to create another kind of tokenism, you know? And like, which is also, but if I say something that is racially insensitive or gender insensitive, just call me on it, you know, and let's talk about it. So I think that's, so you see what I'm saying? So like what we need, we have a hard time delivering. I mean, to what you were saying, Taylor, this morning I was thinking a different version of this, which is people, Americans like progressive ideas, whether it's policy ideas like, you know, the Affordable Care Act
or expanding Medicaid, things, Medicare.
Expanding Medicaid. They like them. They just don't like our politicians, you know, for whatever reason. They like what the brand delivers. They hate the brand. It's like if you took Coke and put it in a, you know, in an RC bottle, they'd be like, I love this, but I hate RC. And you're like, well, I just screwed up my metaphor badly. Anyway, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, either way, yeah.
I was doing great at my metaphors, and then that metaphor just ran into a rubber wall of spikes. I don't know.
I think there's a lot more of the vote to come in, and I don't want to respect your time, Jordy, but I mean, I do think it's interesting. We did, like, a lot of the blue dogs in the PA State House, like Frank Burns in Johnstown, won, you know, from what it stands right now. And so I think before we make sweeping generalizations, like, there's a lot of the vote to come in. Mm-hmm. And on that note, Jordy, do you have any suggestions for events that people could participate in if they want to make sure that the vote is counted?
Yes, thank you for saying that.
Or Keith as well.
Yeah, Protect the Results is a really broad-based coalition that has their website, has a lot of the things that are going on. I know today in Harrisburg at 5 I'm going, and there's an event. There's something tonight in Wilkes-Barre at 5. Why am I saying today? Are we even going to get this up today?
No. I'll get it up.
Oh, that's cool. Saturday in Harrisburg is another big one. So anybody, I think that one's at noon. All of these are, there's just been a real kind of coming together of a lot of different progressive groups into a pretty impressive flotilla. I keep using the metaphor. There's not one big ship of Protect the Vote we're building. It's a flotilla of a lot of ships, and we're making sure everybody has the same maps and compasses. So part of the flotilla is in the lead. Okay, now I'm back on good
metaphors. You're all metaphor, Jordy.
it's my favorite mode on Saturday. But yeah, Protect the Results is a good place to go, or the Hub for Progress, our Facebook group. We have a lot of that stuff there.
Yeah. And Keith, where can people find your hot takes on the election and
my hot takes?
Yeah.
I've been retweeting a lot. Less so my own commentary, but more retweeting of folks who I think have good perspective and are paying attention. I'm very bullish on Wasserman, and I just think he knows. But I think I like the people. Jonathan Tamari with Philadelphia Inquirers had a good take on like mail-in ballots and what needs to be counted and where. So he's a good one. But I think, you know, we just need a collective, like, deep breath. If you want, like, the fighter Democrat, it's J.J. Abbott, who's Governor Wolf's former communications director.
Oh, he's doing a lot of the messaging for Protect the Results. He is good. I like his stuff a lot.
He has his own, comms firm now.
Commonwealth Communications.
Yeah. So he's, you know, you'll get a lot. I mean, he's a fighter, which is great. But it's also, like, he's, you know, he's got some humor and some levity to it all. And you know, he's also like has the, let's everybody take a deep breath, like approach to it, which I appreciate. It's not this panic. And he also really tries to keep the Harrisburg Republicans feet to the fire with what's going on. And some, you know, the lawsuits that happened yesterday, two of them, I guess, the Secretary Buchlar and, you know, so sort of like Wasserman from the big picture, JJ and Tamari for the Pennsylvania stuff. And then just, you know, but I retweet what I think is credible and should be, you know, read.
What's your handle?
My handle is just at Keith J. Pemrick.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to to speak with us today, and I'll get this up, and let's be winners here.
It's nice to see you, Keith, and
you too, Jordy.
Your brother's beautiful property. I like how you're wearing. Is that a Penguins hat?
No, that's a Phillies hat.
I'm kidding.
I didn't know the sun. Like, I didn't know, you know.
Trouble I've had my share, man, I've been there.